This is Jared Payton from the Jared Payton Foundation. And you're listening to Too Much Scrolling. Be great today.
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for August 17th, 2021. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm miles and miles and miles Chip Hasselblad.
I thought you were losing weight.
Well, you know, I'm miles and miles and miles. I'm just a traveler.
You are traveling all over the East Coast. You've been to 11 of the original 13 colonies?
Yeah, we want to say sorry to South Carolina and Rhode Island. I think I may have gone through Rhode Island, but I've hit the other ones, Steve. I hit the other ones.
Rhode Island is so small, you may have driven through it and you didn't know it.
Well, Rhode Island is famous for you, Steve.
You went up to Connecticut. You got to spend some time with Sandwiches at Irregular Hours co-host Pamela Bedore and her two children, Zoe and Izzy. How about that?
And she welcomed me. And that's the important part, that even after all those conversations, she said, you know what? I'll let him meet my children. That's an endorsement right there, Steve.
Zoe has been a big part of our show. Izzy was a big part of Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. And I wanted to be with you guys when you were taking those pictures of you guys being together in Connecticut. That was lovely.
Well, a part of that situation, Steve, that meeting will be part of the Too Much Scrolling studio, because Izzy presented us with an original piece of framed art that she put together for basically commemorating the Sandwiches at Irregular Hours COVID podcast, the Too Much Scrolling, presentation during COVID, where we went through all those books together with Professor Pamela Bedore.
Oh, how much fun. That's wonderful. Thank you, Izzy, for the art. I'm sure it'll come down to the studio, and I look forward to the future where those kids are just going to be wonderful. We had so much fun talking with them over Zoom, and they are some interesting kids that are going to go far.
Well, we all want to have wonderful children, and I can tell you all three of our families are blessed with, you know, exactly what we would want to have.
So there you go.
They were wonderful, and my meeting with Pam went as exactly as I would want it to.
Good.
And I look forward to working with her in the future.
That's right. I got a chance to start school. You might hear it in my voice, and my throat is a little bit overused after 2 days of school. And boy, have I had a great time getting back in the saddle, getting back to school, being in my classroom with my students. We had some wild, wacky weather here last week, Chip. 4 nights in a row, we had massive thunderstorms, knocked out the power for some of the homes and schools around the area for over 24 hours. There was a lot of challenge in getting back to school this week.
Well, Zeus and Odin must be having something to say about this school starting, Steve.
maybe the gods must be crazy. Is that what it is? Are Coca-Cola bottles falling out of the sky? Is that what's happening here?
And for our new listeners, Steve teaches middle school. Mm-hmm. And so this is, we're actually classroom as opposed to working as we worked last year over Zoom.
Yeah. First time in a long time I've had a full class of students. And it's very, very refreshing to have my job be something like it was before the pandemic.
So were the kids excited, Steve?
I think they are. I think that they need that community of people, that togetherness, that social aspect, especially at the middle school. That's something that we focus on a lot, is getting those kids together and figuring out who they are together as a group. And I think that's vital to growing up in middle school age.
And so a few weeks ago, we were down in Indianapolis and we went to Indy PopCon. Mm-hmm. And we got to meet at a convention that is going on currently as we're recording in Rosemont, Illinois. Steve, tell us a little bit about Anime Magic.
Yep. Anime Magic. That's the convention that happened over the weekend in Rosemont. A big celebration of all of those genres of anime. That Japanese animation that you and I, when we were growing up, we knew a little bit of those cartoons that were coming out of Japan. Clutch Cargo and Speed Racer and I remember like The Ghost in the Shell, which was a movie that I really enjoyed that style of animation. Boy, has that style of animation exploded since our childhood, Chip.
And so let's talk a little bit about that, because as two people who are maybe not, we're not the target audience for that. Maybe it's a little bit younger than our demographic, Steve.
Yeah, many of the people that we talked to were a different generation. These are the millennials, and a little bit younger than the millennials even. These are the 20-somethings who really have been growing up in an era where this genre, this anime genre, is a part of their life. They love it. And I love seeing all of the wonderful people in costume. For us, Indie PopCon was our first convention back after COVID, sort of. And for a lot of the people that I met at Anime Magic, this was their first convention back. And they were excited to be there, just like we were when we went to Indie PopCon. Now, of course, we're back to masking. So a lot of people at this convention were in their mask, protecting themselves from the Delta variant, as we see growing in numbers. But the excitement was still there. The thrill of being together, getting to have that tribe of people that all have the same ideas, all have the same passions. And you can see the passion that these people really enjoy this. And I'm just along for the ride. I don't understand the anime group as much as they do, but I'm excited to see their excitement.
And for those who visited, it wasn't just a celebration of anime as far as the movies and the music and things of that nature. It was also a celebration of Japanese culture, wasn't it?
That is one thing that is very special for Anime Magic, this convention. They really wanted to focus on not just this was a movie that we liked, Chris Farley show style. Hey, did you see that movie? Yeah, that was good. They're really focusing on where the whole culture comes together, where calligraphy in the Japanese arts is beautiful and wonderful. They had a sake tasting event, a part of the Japanese culture for the adults in the whole group to experience something that is cultural, different from our day-to-day life. It really brings out all sorts of different parts of this whole group. The wrapped cars, they had these parking lot full of these beautiful sports cars with these beautiful stickers that are from the anime genre, and talking to those guys and how they decided to make their car something that's a piece of art while they're driving down the street. Beautiful. It's really good to be out again.
Well, you know, I've seen enough of the Fast and Furious movies, Steve, to know that I can do some drifting.
I bet there's some drifting that happens in a lot of these cars. I need to ask them about that.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Chip, did you get a chance to make it to the movie theater this week?
If you said movie theater by looking at an iPad and watching The Suicide Squad, then yes.
Okay. I also did not walk into a movie theater this week, but I did watch The Suicide Squad, the latest version of The Suicide Squad. Finally, I got a chance to see this movie at home because it was one of those that they gave us on HBO Max as well as in the movie theater. So you had the choice of how to see this material. I really like this movie, Chip.
And speaking of Japanese culture, it has kaiju scene.
It does, doesn't it? It does. There is definitely a kaiju element to it. The shark is definitely an interesting character.
Are you saying the shark?
Yeah.
The shark is the kaiju? I'm thinking it's the big star.
Okay.
Star
the starfish?
As he stomps through the sea.
This is a fun movie. This is bringing me joy just thinking back through this movie.
All right, so our director is James Gunn. James Gunn previously had been the director for the first two volumes, as they're known, of the Guardians of the Galaxy, taking these obscure Marvel characters and making them into household names. I mean,
beloved.
Yeah, how many people knew Groot? How many people knew Rocket Raccoon? Well, now you do.
Yeah.
And now he's taken the Suicide Squad, equally obscure, but on the other publisher's side, the Suicide Squad is a bunch of characters that maybe you know a little bit about, you know, like the Polka Dot Man, Steve.
I did look up the Polka Dot Man. When he came up in the movie, I did go to Wikipedia to remember who the Polka Dot Man was in the old 60s Batman style comics. And boy, did they have fun with the element of fancying up. They gave him a little more power in the 2021 version of the Polka Dot Man, huh?
Absolutely. And the other thing is, he finally wrote a good Harlequin series. I mean, Margot Robbie's got to be ecstatic that she finally has this character that certainly she's played, at least this is her fourth appearance, finally has something that she can enjoy.
Yeah, Harley Quinn certainly was overused in the previous iterations of the Suicide Squad. Like, it was a Harley Quinn movie. This one is definitely not a Harley Quinn movie, but she is well used, and we have the shorthand as the audience. We know who she is from the previous movies, and she is used very well. We don't need to have her backstory. She is Harley Quinn, and we get it.
But it's not just that. It is worthy of her work. The other ones were toss-aways, really. And that's where DC has really, or Warner Brothers, who owns the DC characters, really has gotten casting well. They just have not gotten stories well. And, you know, knowing Margot Robbie can play Harlequin with a javelin, I mean, that just is bonus, right?
Mm-hmm. How about the advertising for this movie, where we got fooled a little bit in the advertising, didn't we?
Yeah, that was kind of just a setup. We were going to be introduced to the Weasel, and of course, Pete Davidson's character, Steve.
The Blackguard, right?
We don't know him as Blackguard. We know him as anything else. Steve, we're juvenile boys. What do we know him as?
his name is Dick Hertz.
Of course it is, Steve.
But remember when we were studying with Professor Pam in Sandwiches at Irregular Hours, we learned about the Black Guard. That is the British Victorian name for any male who is a bad guy, who is beating his wife, who is stealing from his company. That's a Black Guard. And that is the superhero name that Pete Davidson's character, Dick Hertz, is using.
So we learned a lot about him as we spent the entire movie exploring his backstory.
Yeah, this is a Pete Davidson run movie. That was the advertising, right? That's the way that they sold it to us. Like, come and watch Pete Davidson, be Pete Davidson. And then the switcheroo happens in the very beginning of this film. Spoilers, by the way, for anyone who has not seen this movie yet. Spoilers, they blow Pete Davidson's face off, and it's totally gratuitous, and I loved it.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about this right now. This movie is rated R. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the violence is in the vein of the movie that you enjoy so much.
The Evil Dead series. The Ash versus Evil Dead TV show on Stars is the most gratuitous violence, but it's done in a way that it is so obnoxiously gratuitous, it's funny. They are trying to make comedy out of this horrific situation.
Well, and the Suicide Squad and James Gunn, they're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the rub on this, that the Suicide Squad, these are children's characters, they're young person's characters. And we have a rated R film where we're going to be talking about, I mean, we're going to be viewing young people's characters as a rated R film. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, between the limbs getting cut off and heads getting cut off and
faces
stuff like that,
exploded.
This is just violence and gore. And in a humorous way.
And in a humorous way. And that's the part that I'm okay with. It's being done in a way that you look at it and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that they went and did that. That's kind of funny that they blew Pete Davidson's face off. Because it was totally not Blackguard. It was totally not this character's face. It was totally Pete Davidson.
Well, this is, like I said, there are going to be students at the middle school who mm-hmm. are going to be wearing Suicide Squad t-shirts, who are going to be talking about this film. And once again, it is rated R.
Yeah.
And this is exactly what the issue I'm having with it.
That's troubling. I absolutely agree. This is a movie that is built for the Gen Xers who read these comics, knew these characters, and now that we've grown up, these characters have matured, and we're going to give this adult, R-rated story to the Gen Xers. But you're absolutely right. The next generation, the 12-year-olds, want to watch this movie. And what does that do for our culture? What does that do for storytelling going forward?
Yeah. So John Cena is also in this. He plays Peacekeeper. He's probably the Captain America that we know.
Yeah. I still see him more as a Tick kind of character where he is absolutely genuine, but at the same time, he's so genuine that he's blind to how he's portrayed by the other characters.
Well, but he's following, you know, what America wants is what this is stating. Also, Idris Elba,
yes,
is our leader. He's very good in this. This is an incredibly gifted cast.
And I love the interaction between Idris Elba and John Cena, being basically the same character from two very different directions and occupying the same space. And they have that conversation about how they get the job done and they're doing it right and the other person is wrong, but they're so similar. I love that conversation.
So I'm gonna disagree. I think John Cena's character is a Captain America to the extreme. And Idris Elba is just a mercenary. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the idea that they can work similarly is one thing, but they're coming from maybe a little bit different place.
Yeah.
I do think this is a very gifted film for what it was doing. I have a strong feeling that, in my opinion, the zeitgeist of the superhero genre is over. I just don't know how they can continue to put this type of money, especially on the format, so we're going to be watching these films.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this is a 50 out of 100, although it's a very skilled film for those who really like this genre.
I really like this genre. I really like this movie. I had a lot of fun watching this movie, seeing what they were doing, understanding what they were doing and why they were doing it. I agree with you that putting it out there for a child audience is problematic. But for me as an adult, I really enjoyed this film.
And James Gunn really knows how to work with the absurdities of the comic book.
Yep.
Genre and film, and I think that worked out real well.
So,
Steve, that was not the only superhero thing that you watched this week. You got a chance to watch something off of Disney Plus.
Yes, the What If series has hit Disney Plus this week, and this is a comic book series that I really enjoyed when I was a kid. The comics ran from 1977 to 1998, and the concept of What If is kind of a literary device. The idea of you understand the timeline, you understand the narrative, you understand the characters. Now, what if we made one small change in that narrative, one small change in how these characters interact, and what if we made that change, what would the consequences of that change lead to? This is one of my favorite ways to write short stories. This is a wonderful way to think about what's happening and the consequences.
When Steve talked about the grand story, is from Marvel was introduced in 1963 with Fantastic Four, and the idea was at any point you could kind of jump in on the stories, and it didn't matter which book, but it's part of the grand narrative all the way up until, I mean, it probably changed maybe about 10 years ago or so because it became so heavy for writers to work with. But if at any point you know, if a character died, but the character lived this time, or if instead of one person getting a superpower, another person got a superpower, that was what the series was designed around. This is taking that concept and moving it. Is it to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
It is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now, the question is this canon to the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And probably the answer is no. This is just that literary device trying to see what might happen with a small change in the MCU. But taking those stories that everybody knows from that MCU, that giant pile of movies and stories, taking those and going in a different direction with them to see the consequences.
So tell me about the first story that you explored.
Yeah, the first episode is the story of Captain America, Steve Rogers, and he is about to become the first super soldier. They're going to give him the serum that gives him super strength. You remember from the first Captain America movie, he was this scrawny little skinny person until they gave him this amazing medical technology that made him buff, muscular, and athletic, and super. What if in that moment he was unable to get into the chamber to become Captain America? And what if instead Agent Peggy Carter took his place, got into the chamber, and had the serum injected into her, and she, instead of becoming Captain America, becomes Captain Britain, and goes on to have adventures with her superpowers.
So this is told in an animated format. Mm-hmm. And is it using the voice actors from the movies?
Yep, it's all the original voice actors from the MCU getting a chance to play these characters again and to give us another narrative, another story from that genre that we love, and giving us more of a thought experiment on that, you know, kind of like riffing on that idea of what the MCU gave us.
Okay, and how does this, is this going to fit into the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I don't think so. I don't think so, but we were introduced to the TVA, the Time Variance Authority, in the Loki series, which was also on Disney Plus. And the idea of multiple universes exists in the MCU, and maybe, just maybe, there's going to be a Doctor Strange movie that's going to look into the idea of multiple universe theory, and maybe, just maybe, we will see how this thought experiment of what if and the consequences is going to mesh in with all of those things in the fourth phase.
So Khan could actually be Doctor Strange.
Khan! Sorry. I don't know how much Star Trek is going to get into it.
Excellent, excellent. Steve, what is opening this week?
There's a couple of good movies, hopefully good movies, coming out this week. The first one's called Reminiscence. This features Hugh Jackman, everybody's favorite. He's playing
the Wolverine, Steve.
He's going to sing and dance. He's doing a version of Oklahoma. No. This is Hugh Jackman, the scientist this time. He discovers a way to relive your past and uses that technology to search for his long-lost love.
Steve, have we seen this story before?
This seems really close to the story of Recursion that we read during Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. Recursion by Blake Crouch, that was published in 2019, has a very, very similar story about a scientist traveling back to previous iterations of themselves in order to change the way things went the first time. I don't know if it'll go the same way as Recursion, but just even the title, Reminiscence and Recursion, it seems to me to be one of those times where Hollywood found out there was a story being made and they hurried up and wrote a similar story to get to the movie theater first.
All right, so we have Wolverine in a movie. Now we need Nick Fury. Is there a movie with Nick Fury in this movie? Maybe the Batman?
Yes, there is a Nick Fury and Batman movie. Finally, the movie that we've been waiting for. This is The Protégé. Oh. This features Michael
Keaton.
That
sounds French.
Yeah, it's got accent marks on it. That's how you can tell it's French. Michael Keaton, one of the Batmans, and Samuel Jackson. This is a story of a child rescued by a legendary assassin. You might remember The Professional, where we got the first... That's one of my first ideas of an assassin finds a child and teaches that child the skills needed to be an assassin. This looks like a great adventure.
All right. And Steve, is there a movie for the young people?
Yeah. Back again to the idea of we need to provide movies for young people and for us old people. The Paw Patrol movie is coming to theaters this week. And back to the idea of, are we ready to go back to theaters? Are kids ready to go back to the theaters? I know they want to, but is this the right time to release the Paw Patrol movie? I guess we'll find out.
Well, you got all that gum underneath the seats that you can share. I mean, Steve, there's no chances of spreading germs that way. So Paw Patrol.
It's fine. Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. You know, I have been reading a lot of books during the pandemic, Chip.
Well, I can imagine. And what I'm really looking forward to is seeing how you stretch yourself out of your favorite genre.
Fine, Chip. Let me present you with a time travel book. Fine. I read Una Out of Order this week. This was published in 2020 by Margarita Montemore. This is a time travel book. Surprise, everyone! The idea here is this young lady in Brooklyn in 1982 celebrates her 19th birthday, and because she was born on the first of the year, when she celebrates her 19th birthday, that moment when the clock strikes midnight and it becomes the January 1st, her consciousness actually travels into her 51-year-old body, skipping 32 years of her life, her consciousness being 19, in the body of herself at 51.
Are there three ghosts, Steve?
That's Christmas. That's not New Year's. That's Christmas.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
The New Year's story was The Chimes. We read that one from Charles Dickens as well.
Oh, excellent, Steve. Excellent. This is interesting because what you just described is on January 1st, when the New Year strikes, she is going to jump into different years. So she goes from 19 to 51 years. And then the next January 1st, it could go to, you know, another part.
Right. She lives that full year in that life of that 51-year-old Una. Then, on January 1st, she then knows that she's going to leap, and they do use the word leap. This is quantum leap.
Oh, excellent.
She is going to leap into another year of her life, into another situation, and she's going to go into it completely blind, not knowing anybody, not knowing where she is, not knowing where she lives, because sometimes you move and you don't live in the same house that you lived in 30 years ago.
What is fascinating about this concept is you're living your life out of order.
Mm-hmm.
And decisions you make at any one of those years could have an impact on the future self. So how do you plan for your career when you're leaping to in the middle of your career? How do you plan for your family when you're leaping to a time when they could be grown up?
Yeah.
I mean, it just is, it's fascinating. Is it a reminder kind of live each moment?
Live for the moment. Live for the moment. Find out who you are today. Figure out who you are. That's really the theme of this, is finding yourself, understanding who you are today. It might not be the same person that you were 30 years ago. That maybe living for today is the right way to get through this life. And living it out of order is complicated. She has a lot of complicated conversations. But one thing about time travel is she doesn't have to worry about her career. She goes back to a younger age and does some careful investing and then writes that down in a book that she hands off to herself every year. So she's able to make a living because she knows the future.
She's going full Biff on this, Steve, from Back to the Future, right?
Yeah, it is. There's definitely a Back to the Future element to this. There's definitely a knowing the future and providing yourself with what you need to be successful. But again, the theme is knowing yourself today and finding out who you are blindly today. You don't know what's going to happen, but finding out that's the adventure.
Okay. And is there a message that we should know from this book?
I think that we have our hang-ups, we have our histories, and those histories can weigh us down. And if we can learn to forget and learn to push forward and learn to forgive any previous parts of our narrative, I think that we'll be better off.
Wonderful.
That's Una Out of Order. It was published in 2020 by Margarita Montemore.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You're driving around. There's kids playing behind you. You're in America right now, Chip.
I am, Steve. I've hit so many states. And one of the things about traveling today is that we get to use these GPS systems. And it's not your old TomTom, even though I had a TomTom car at one of the hotels. He was parked next to me. And I guess his job is to drive around and map the roads of America. But I got to use many of our map systems the apps that we use on our phone. The map that I've used most often, especially when my travels between North Carolina and Chicago, has been Waze, because I find Waze to be incredibly useful because there is this ability to crowdsource information. Well, you know, all of a sudden you know where the police officers are, and all of a sudden you know where the wrecks are. All of a sudden you know where obstacles are in the road, from cars on the side of the road or things in the middle of the road.
Because somebody driving up ahead of you marked all of those things for you, kind of like a scout in front of your party.
And you see how useful this is, especially if you are in an area that you're unfamiliar with. And mm-hmm. now you know, hey, you need to go the back road because, you know, your current road is, you know, has an obstacle in it or something like that. Well, Waze worked well, I guess, when I was from North Carolina through Virginia. But once we got to Maryland and started moving up and started getting into more dense areas and more rural areas, Waze was having all sorts of problems. It was constantly searching. As you can imagine, any type of service like this is taking in a tremendous amount of data. And you've got to turn that data in, and then you got to make it useful in seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But what was happening is it was missing roads. It was sending me on. I can't describe it other than it was so buggy. Mm-hmm. I had to stop using it. And I switched over to Apple Maps, and Apple Maps has had a recent update, and I was having some challenges with that. I had to go to Google Maps to try to help me out. Google Maps seemed to work better. Now, Waze and Google Maps are owned by the same parent company, Alphabet, Steve, that you know nobody would ever know. So we'll just call it Google. We'll call it Google, right?
Everybody's favorite company, Alphabet.
Yeah, because nobody knows what that is, but everyone knows what Google is. So have you had any issues at all using Waze?
I have, actually. I have been a user of Waze for years, and I've also seen some bugginess in it locating me, using the GPS to triangulate my position, and it being way off. Like, it's thinking that I'm off-road because whatever calculation that's happening is happening incorrectly. I have also switched over to Google Maps as my main GPS.
All right, so one of the real challenges with Waze is obviously it's free. They get their money from advertisement. So when you stop at a stoplight, all of a sudden there's a McDonald's across the street, and it will say, hey, wouldn't it be great to have some McDonald's or something of that nature?
Wouldn't you like some McDonald's right now? It sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, it's a Chicago hamburger, Steve. It's a staple that maybe you can find across the nation.
Right.
Well... But they also use a lot of volunteers to do their editing and to write their software. And I'm wondering if apps at some point get to be so large and so used that the volunteer service is just not appropriate. Now, you know, we can think of like Firefox as a good example of crowdsourced editing and creating a browser that seems to be working fine. But Waze seems to really be not working the way we would like it to work. And that's kind of dangerous, Steve.
Yeah, because you are so dependent upon it. You need it for this trip. You don't have a glove box full of maps for this trip, right?
Yeah, and working with a glove box full of maps is so archaic, Steve. And, you know, trying to position myself in the sun, it just doesn't work when I'm traveling down the highway.
I'm just a caveman.
So I demand perfection is what happens.
And you know all of the magic of all of these apps. There's so many moving parts to it that demanding perfection is very difficult. One of our listeners actually told me once that he prefers Waze for his journey from home to work. That is his GPS for that travel. For all the things that you mentioned, the crowdsourcing of where things are, dependent upon that journey. But for longer trips, he switches over to Google Maps as well because it's more reliable. It's generally more accurate.
Well, the crowdsourcing part of this is what is missing in the Apple and Google Maps. And my feeling is that using something like Waze and knowing where all the police traps are is very useful to us. But if it was Apple or Google and through their map service providing that, then there certainly could be legislation or something to fight that. Like, right. How dare you give away our positions? That's putting people at risk.
That has been litigated. There have been court cases about that because the police certainly want to have a level of secrecy to their work. And we as the citizens, we don't want secret police. We want to make sure that we have a handle on what the police are doing. And that has been a debate.
Well, and here's the rub on that. I mean, in the city of Chicago right now, with the speed cameras that are being set up, they're sending out tickets for people going 6 miles over the speed limit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about living in a surveillance state is absolutely appalling.
It's
in fact, the citizens who live in Chicago need to say, this is inappropriate. This is not a way to run a civilized society. And if they wanted to deal with it a different way, then deal with it a different way. close down roads, you know, force them to use public transportation. But the idea of having cameras set up and sending out tickets just anonymously, that just that just reeks of abuse of power right there.
Yep, taking away your privacy in the name of security. Sounds familiar, Chip.
Steve, COVID seems to be making a resurgence. And tell me a little bit about how that potentially could work with the theaters.
Yeah, we've got a lot of question marks right now about COVID. We don't know what's going to happen, but the numbers are certainly rising. We've got this Delta variant that seems to be the dominant part of COVID now in the United States. And there's a lot of question marks. One of the questions is about theaters. Are you going to the movie theater once a week like you used to? Is that a part of your routine? And can the movie makers make money by putting their movies into the theaters?
Well, and we're getting a little bit of test of that. We see that Free Guy was not released streaming this week. It was released strictly in the movie theater. And for those of you who are not familiar with Free Guy, it stars Deadpool, right, Steve?
Right. This is definitely a Ryan Reynolds, very much in that Deadpool-type genre where he is our starry-eyed character going through life in a video game. So did you like this movie, Free Guy, Chip?
I have not seen it, Steve. I haven't gone to a theater.
Aha, I didn't see it either because I didn't go to a theater either. I think that this barometer of box office work is really going to test whether or not you and I like going to the movie theater. We like watching movies. We did not go to the movie theater to watch this movie. What did we watch? We watched The Suicide Squad because it was at home on HBO Max. I watched What If because it was at home on Disney Plus.
All right, and speaking of that, it's creating some real challenges with a lot of the contracts as are written for the actors and how they are going to be compensated, because Disney had an issue with Scarlett Johansson, right?
Well, Scarlett Johansson had an issue with Disney, really.
All right.
The contract that Scarlett Johansson signed with Disney for the Black Widow movie said she was going to get a percentage of the theatrical ticket money, and Disney promised not to put this movie out any other way other than in the theaters for a period of time. Because of COVID, they left that movie on the shelf for a very long time and decided that they couldn't just not release this movie, release it 4 years from now or whatever. They had to release this movie, and the only way to do that was to do a simultaneous release, both at home on Disney Plus for $29.99 and at the movie theater. And Scarlett Johansson says that's breaking the contract. You said I was going to get a percentage of the ticket money, and the ticket money was greatly reduced, probably by about half because of the home release.
Yeah. It's obviously, it had an impact on how she'll be compensated. Disney, it looks like they came to an arrangement, or at least they're offering an arrangement, to kind of work around that, because it really is a big issue for her. And it also could rifle through the future releases, because Disney has an entire
backlog
of movies that have already been put together. They're basically finishing them up to release, Eternals being the one that's coming up next. We'll see how that ends up playing out. Obviously, it's going to impact the type of films that are going to be released going forward, as far as how do you greenlight a multi-million-dollar film that potentially have $1 billion box office under pre-COVID days, but how that's going to be limited right now. So who knows?
Yeah. It's going to change. The movie industry was hanging on by a thread in terms of the movie theaters before COVID, and this could be devastating to that industry.
It certainly could change it quite a bit. We'll have a lot more modest films as far as being produced. Steve, let's talk a little bit about end-to-end encryption.
Oh, everybody's favorite topic, end-to-end encryption. Good.
And our good friends at Apple and what they're doing with their iPhone.
Yeah, Apple has announced that they will start searching photos in your iPhone to see if those photos contain illegal images of child pornography.
So let's think about this real quick. It's not your iCloud account or your backup service. So it's not on the cloud. This is on your physical device.
Mm-hmm. Because they've already searched through their files, those backed up iCloud files that are on their network that legally they own because they are on their network. They've already searched those. Now they're going one step further and they're opening up your personal device and checking to see if you have any of these illegal images.
Sure. And I'm not justifying the images. The images are immoral for just by virtue of them existing.
Absolutely. But nobody is saying that it's okay for us to have these illegal images. Nobody wants child pornography.
Okay, but on the grand scheme of things, either something is encrypted or it isn't encrypted. And the idea that they can take an encrypted thing, whether on the cloud or on your physical device, and unencrypt it to take a look at it, just seems to reek that it's not encrypted.
Mm-hmm. It's either encrypted or it's not. There is no in-between. And Apple is arguing that there is an in-between, that they promise that they're only going to look for these certain images that have this certain fingerprint that are known entities, and they're going to check only that, and then they're going to close the file. They're never going to do anything else. But that means that they can do other things.
Exactly. And imagine you're a Jewish person in Nazi Germany, and they had this type of technology available to them. How comfortable would a person be at that point? They shouldn't feel comfortable at all.
Who gets to make the decision about what files we're going to check today? Yes, we all agree child pornography needs to be eliminated. We all agree we want to get rid of that. But what else? What's the next thing that some random nameless, faceless person decides they need to check for that on your phone?
And all you have to do is think of the McCarthy, the communist type of thing going on, that where they basically blacklisted people. This could be people's jobs. Mm-hmm. And by all means, once again, we're not justifying the material that they're trying to find. We're basically trying to argue that this idea that somehow that stuff that should be encrypted can be unwound is absolutely not appropriate. This is either it is or it isn't. There's no in-between. So my initial thought on this, Steve, is would be using something like a VPN. Would that be able to protect you?
And the answer to that, unfortunately, is no. A virtual private network, a VPN, is the method of moving the data from one place to another to protect yourself, to give you a little bit of anonymity so that you cannot be identified in that transmission. But what Apple is doing is going into your iPhone. They know that you have an iPhone. They built it. They made all the software. They know that iPhone has a file folder, and they can check that file folder remotely. This has nothing to do with transmission of any of this material.
All right, and this to me sounds like this technology has been existing, because all you need to do is think about, imagine you're a protester over in Hong Kong right now, and you're working under, and you're trying to be private. And, first of all, you leave your phone at home. You don't bring anything that's got any type of that stuff. But the idea that a country, a company, a group could somehow infiltrate your private information and somehow use it to exploit you or find you or to target you or any number of things. This is the exact, at some point, that we're going to need to, it's going to be some kind of, when I say Bill of Rights, it's going to have to be an agreement that companies and countries and stuff like that just cannot, should not have the ability to infiltrate your private information, even if we're using their services.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's a locker that sits on your phone that holds your information, that divvies it out, and it's never held at their, you know, facility or something like that, their mm-hmm. servers. There's got to be something that's going to be done, because this right now we're getting to the point where, listen, these are not targeted ads that, you know, tell you to go to Target and pick out a certain, you know,
is that what targeted ads are? They're ads for Target.
Well, it could be, but this is now the infiltration of private information to the level that it could be used to exploit you. Imagine mm-hmm. someone placing something. If they can view it, why couldn't mm-hmm. they place it there?
And do they even need to place it there? Do they even need to actually plant the evidence? Can they just reveal in the court case that they have evidence?
Well, there's even a better one. Is uh-huh. the point is, all you do is be accused of it. You
know,
imagine you're a person and you've got a job and a career and all those other things, and now you're just accused. This is the type of stuff that is, you know, there's just, we're going to have to find a better way of working this. This is, it's unfortunate that we're having to move this way, but mm-hmm. it seems to be a violation of individual liberty, and we're going to have to find a way to protect the individual. I know that we're using their services. I know that we're the product, but on the grand part of this, you're not really agreeing to, because you don't know what you're agreeing to. How can mm-hmm. you consciously agree to something that is, you know, a 50-page document that you really don't know what you're agreeing to?
Altering the document, altering the deal in this new, we are going to do this. We had no choice in this. We had no vote in this. If we own an iPhone, we are under this contract.
And companies do this all the time. And countries do it all the time. It doesn't matter. But they're negative response. Mm-hmm. You know, you're receiving this notice that the terms have changed. And mm-hmm. If you don't accept them, you know, you can call us. But regardless, now that this is beyond this. This is where we're going to have to figure out a way of doing it. The real challenge with creating some kind of agreement like this, instead of a gentleman's agreement, is that we could limit the usefulness. I mean, one of the beautiful things about mm-hmm. the computer industry is it's been not regulated, and all these beautiful things have been able to come from it. When mm-hmm. you start regulating it, all of a sudden you're limiting what someone can dream up, the imagination. But, yeah. you know, we're starting to get to the point where there's abuses. And when Tim Cook has to make this agreement, he's making it because, I mean, the consequences are great for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say him, not personally, but for Apple or any other group. But this seems to be a violation of what most of us would, if we understood what the arguments are, would find agreeable. Even yeah. though what the FBI and what Tim Cook is agreeing to is not justifiable.
Right.
So anyway, yeah. there we go.
There you go. There's your up story to end the show. This is 1984 stuff. This is surveillance. This is trading your personal liberty for security. And do you wind up with either one at the end?
No bueno. No bueno.
Ah, great. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
We'll find out where you are in the world next week. It sounds like a lot of people are having a lot of fun in the lobby of that hotel, Chip.
Well, you know, it's breakfast time, Steve, and you know what that means. Lots of bagels, lots of sandwiches.
If you need more information, give us a call or text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Send us an email, toomuchscrolling@gmail.com. Our website is toomuchscrolling.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm miles and miles and miles of Chip Esposito.
We'll see you in the future.